Can I ask Patrick to come up and maybe talk to us for a couple of minutes about Chatterfook, who you are, and what we can expect from our partnership? Thank you. Welcome, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Hello, everyone. My name is Patrick Tsang. I'm the chief executive of Chow Tai Fook Enterprises. Very happy to be here. Very happy to see you all today. I guess what I'll do is first start off with a little history about our company, and then we can move on to talk more about why this joint venture would make sense. I joined Chow Tai Fook Enterprises about 6 years ago. Chow Tai Fook Enterprises was founded by Dr. Cheng Yutong's father-in-law back in 1929. The company started in Macau, but Dr. Cheng Yutong was tasked to bring the business to Hong Kong. We are a gold and diamond company. That's the roots of the family. After Dr. Cheng Yutong took the business to Hong Kong, similar to a lot of the large families in Hong Kong in the early 70s, besides getting involved in the gold and diamond business, we've moved on to real estate and property development. So together with Cheng Kong Holdings, with Sun Hung Kai, and with Henderson Land, New World Development, which is our flagship real estate development company, was listed in the Hong Kong Stock Exchange in the early 70s. And I'm happy to report that today we continue to be the top four local property development companies in Hong Kong and China. With the focus on real estate development, clearly we also gotten closer to the Hong Kong government, and with that relationship, we started investing heavily into the infrastructure side. So if you look at the local bus service in Hong Kong, the ferry service to Macau, infrastructure projects in Macau relating to water treatment and electricity, toll road management in China, select airports in China, the Hong Kong Convention Center, those are all operated and organized under a LISCO that we now have in Hong Kong called NWS. So besides the real estate development projects, we've also moved into the infrastructure side. We've always viewed ourselves as catering to the emerging middle class in China. We like to be selling them gold and diamond products. We like to be selling them apartments and taking care of their living needs, infrastructure needs. As the emerging middle class in Hong Kong and China was becoming more affluent, we've also expanded our presence. So we've also expanded into retail and hospitality. Today, I'm happy to report that throughout Hong Kong and China, we have about 40 department stores. The department store business is also separately listed in Hong Kong. More recently, you would have noticed that Dr. Adrian Chang, who's the chairman of New World Development, has also spearheaded the development of K11 shopping malls. So besides department stores, we have now in place the plan to open around 29 K11 stores over many cities in China. So these are shopping malls away from just department store concepts. As a parallel development to the retail and hospitality side, we also have focused on developing hotel assets throughout Hong Kong, China, as well as internationally. So today, under the Rosewood brand, we operate and manage about 70 hotels around the world, with another 40 under development. The business is managed by Dr. Chang's daughter, Sonia Chang. And the Rosewood brand is actually tiered into four different groups. The Rosewood brand, which is a six-star offering, New World Hotels, as well as Cost Hotels, which are more five-star business travel. And finally, Penta Hotels, which is the newer lifestyle, more boutique feel hotels. Some of the more well-known names globally would include the Hotel Creon in Paris, would include the Carlyle Hotel in New York, would include the Beverly Wilshire in Los Angeles, as well as the Rosewood Hotels in London, in Beijing, and soon to be in Hong Kong. I would say if you look at the development of the many different segments of business, it spans across many different industries. And as I mentioned in the beginning, I've joined this group for about 6 years now. Prior to that, I've always been a banker at Deutsche Bank and at UBS and at Lehman Brothers. Since joining this group, we have entered into a few main areas. I would say this investment and our partnership with Star is a very important part of at least what I've done since my 6 years at Chow Tai Fook Enterprises. And to me, it's important to emphasize three things to you all here. Number one is that this investment, and by investment, I don't mean just monetary investment, but investing time and relationship with the Star Entertainment here, this is important to us, and we take this investment very seriously. With this investment, we have actually expanded outside of just hospitality into, as many of you might have noticed, the investment at Alinta Energy. So, number one, this is important to us. Number two, I would like to highlight that as a family, we do have many important relationships that we've fostered throughout the years globally. So we are a long-term investor. We value long-term relationships, and we value mutually benefiting relationships. And I would say the last point is we do see that we can bring real value add to the relationship. It's always important that the relationship is complementary, so we each have our own expertise that we can bring to the table. I've mentioned that we've entered into other long-term relationships in other countries. Just like to highlight some of the other projects that we've worked on throughout the years, and certainly these predate my time at Chow Tai Fook Enterprises. I'm happy to report that we were, for example, the first to bring Ferrari to China. Today we operate about 12 dealerships throughout 4 cities in China. Obviously, nowadays, Ferrari boasts a lot more dealerships, but we were the first to bring Ferrari to China 12 years ago. We have a long-standing partnership with the Hyatt family. Currently, all the Hyatt hotels in Hong Kong, we own and they manage for us. So that's a very long-term relationship with the Pritzker family there, and it has expanded through decades. And most recently, with our investment in the Bahamar Resort in the Bahamas, the Hyatt family is also helping us manage a few hotels there. Away from that, we are dealers for Princess Yachts throughout China as well as in Hong Kong. Though not by monetary value or very large investments, but I think in terms of what we are talking about today here, of attracting that segment of the market that you're most interested in, I think that relationship also helps us build up our database. Maybe I'll move on to the next slide. I want to spend some time talking about, you know, why we're confident in terms of bringing in the right type of tourists to Australia, and why, in the first place, we are interested in this partnership with the Star. We see a lot of value in the Star's privileged assets, as well as substantial untapped opportunities. Particularly the thematic that we're seeing around the Asian traveler. We've all seen how important Chinese tourism has contributed to the economy in Hong Kong and the benefits that we as a group have achieved. We know this customer base, and we're confident that we'll be able to bring them and develop and educate them about the appeal of the Star, as well as the excellent assets that the Star have in Australia. I've talked a little bit about how we see ourselves as complementary to the Star, and I think there we need to focus on real estate development, retail, and hospitality. We believe the combination of the Star's position and assets, as well as our expertise, is well-placed to take advantage of the large and continuing growth of tourism in Australia. As you can see in the charts that I've outlined here, the size and the scale of the Chinese tourists is growing on an unprecedented scale. There are about 145 million Chinese outbound trips last year, and this trend is forecast to grow at a rate of 15% per year. But what is less well known is the shape that this travel is taking. As the Chinese traveler gets more affluent, they're becoming more adventurous and traveling farther away. So in terms of the trend of Chinese tourists, they're no longer just going to Hong Kong and Macau and other parts of China. They're actually more interested in long-haul destinations. This group of tourists is also becoming more sophisticated, and they're looking after more unique experiences. Before, Chinese tourists are always looking for packaged tours. I'm happy to report that nowadays things have moved on. I think the word that we always use these days is, you know, curating unique experiences, right? And you can definitely see that this word curating, right, unique experiences really resonate well with this group of younger Chinese travelers. And I would say that today, package tours account for less than 50% of all the tourists that we are seeing. And I believe in particular, and I've personally traveled around Australia, this is very important because of the offering that one can see in Australia. It really allows a lot of flexibility for tourists to really pick what they want and curate their own unique experiences. So the size, the growth, and the premiumization of the Chinese outbound travel is where we see the fit in our strategy together with Star. We want to focus on the premium traveler, meeting their traveling expectations to drive initial and repeat visitation. And I think we have what is required to attract this group of people. Then we go to the last slide. Finally, just in terms of what the Chinese outbound picture would look like in the future, and these are pretty encouraging numbers. The Chinese inbound market is expected to grow at a rate of, to be around 42% of the total growth from all inbound travel over the next 10 years. And inbound, I mean going to Australia. And Chinese inbound traffic flow is targeted to grow at a rate of 3.4 times over the next 10 years. Hence, we see significant opportunity in this tourism story for the Star and our partnership. The appeal of Australia, the appeal of Queensland, of Sydney, is in particular the best of Australia, what we call the best of Australia in 5 days. And clearly what we have observed is that when Chinese tourists do come to Australia, they want to hit at least two destinations, if not three, and hence the concept around spending more time and visiting more than one location at a time. Finally, I would just like to just very quickly a few remarks about my personal experience. I've been traveling to Brisbane for over 4 years now, and I would say every time I learn something new, I just arrived this morning, and I remember the first time stepping out of the airport. It's the same flight that arrives bright and early, 6:30 in the morning, and you walk out of the airport, you just get a sense of the climate, the air quality of the air, today was raining a little bit, but still, as you walk out of the airport, you do feel that this is different. And, you know, I'm coming in from Hong Kong, which from an air quality perspective, it's already okay. But imagine somebody living in China where a lot of the parents nowadays are concerned around air quality, food quality, cleanliness, and health of food products. You know, as you arrive Brisbane, as you arrive Australia, that is just a very different feeling. And from that feeling onwards, I am very confident that working together with The Star, we can curate very unique experience for this targeted group of travelers, whether they are looking for an action-packed adventure, whether they want to spend time at the casino, whether they want to look for perhaps opportunities in education and otherwise for their kids, that we have the right offering for them. So thank you, Matt, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Patrick. Any questions for Patrick?
Put that on. Thanks for coming down, Patrick. So I think in a few slides ago, Matt was talking about the upside to penetrating the loyalty database. And I think there were some statistics on there suggesting that a 1% penetration of that database would give about $30 million of EBITDA. Just curious on, I guess, your confidence on getting to that level of penetration within your loyalty scheme. And also, can you share of any other JVs that you might have done this sort of marketing to in the past and how that went?
Sure, thank you. I would say first to a little bit on internally over on Chow Tai Fook's side, how we compile this database. Clearly, we have many different lines of businesses. The three main areas where I would think the database would be relevant to the Star would be our loyalty members in the hotel side, would be the loyalty members on the real estate development side, the NWD side, as well as the loyalty members on Chow Tai Fook jewelry side. So those three would be the relevant target base. But beyond that, there's a fourth layer, which is very important, is also between Chow Tai Fook and Far East Group. In terms of the network of, I would say, the super premium customers is also very important. And those may or may not belong to the database, but these are personal relationships that our respective chairmen would hold with other industry leaders within Hong Kong and China. So I would put those four pockets as where we would be looking at to develop this database. In terms of successful cases where we have cross-sold opportunities, right, in lack of a better word, I would say on a smaller scale, but equally important, why I mentioned Ferrari and Princess Yachts is just because of just pushing the right focus for those brands. Clearly, it's not as significant a JV as what we have here with The Star. Other long-term relationships that we've shared, I had mentioned the Hyatt family before. To the other extreme, we've actually worked with Donald Trump. I mean, we helped him out, right, when he was having financial difficulty in his development project on the Upper West Side in New York City. The reason I mentioned that turned out to be a highly successful development project for all of us. And if you look at the disclosure that Trump had made during his presidential campaign, the number one project that he has made money is that project that we've worked on together. Although that project did end up in the lawsuit, but that's more, I think, him than us. But he's made the most money off all his investments through that project. We also have a very long-standing relationship with Suez out of France, which is on the water treatment and infrastructure side. Very different business, but again, in terms of just showing that how we can motivate our resources to help to deliver success to our project, I think that's also a successful case. I talked about Alinta Energy, and most recently through that platform, we've acquired Loyang B from Engie, another French company. And it so happened that Engie and Suez shared the same parentage. So when we were negotiating with them, that was a useful connection there. So, you know, there'll be other cases of success in terms of how we work with our partners to leverage our own loyalty base.
Thank you. Okay. Last question before we go, Larry.
Unrelated questions for me. First, Patrick, just in terms of that loyalty system, what specifically are you doing to make sure that database is utilized? Are you allocating staff to drive action out of that database, or is STAR bringing staff up to your organizations to drive actions? That's the first question. The second question is, you're looking like, looks like you'll be going to, with Far East 20% holding of STAR. It seems like the family uses equity, public equity in most of its businesses, but you probably exert control in those other businesses. What's your view on in terms of your Australian equity relationship? Is it something that you ultimately need control, or are you happy with, say, 20% and not control?
Sure, thank you. I would say, if I address the second question first, we do invest in many countries and many different situations. I had mentioned this is a something that's very important to me to get right, and I would say we are happy with what we have now, and any further developments, obviously, we need to work with the STAR as well as obtain the right regulatory approval. But we do see this as a very long-term partnership and long-term investment. I'm a banker by training. I get asked a lot, you know, Patrick, do you hedge your positions, right? Alinta was a big investment. This is not a small investment. And I always echo our chairman's a vision, which is he sees the family as growing bigger and bigger. There are 10 grandchildren who are all in their 30s and 40s now, so they all need to build their own little empires. And in his mind, why are we branching into Australia? Is, you know, Hong Kong has a we share a UK a Commonwealth history, so having grown up and as part of Hong Kong, we're very comfortable investing in quote-unquote Commonwealth countries, the same legal framework. And we've made a lot of investments in the U.S., in the U.K., and now in Australia. Do we always hedge? We don't always hedge because we do see this as very long-term. We don't necessarily have to repatriate the capital back to Hong Kong. We always try to get local financings when we invest in these countries. So hopefully that gives you a sense that we want to get things right with our respective investments. I don't necessarily need to be in control as long as we feel like the relationship is mutually benefiting, that we're all developing our own respective value add, then we're happy with that. Can we do that? Would we do that? Of course, we can consider many different permutations of that.
And on the first part, let me perhaps take that. So that's been driven out of the STAR at this point. So we've taken leadership, ownership of the scoping responsibility and the staffing up initially to see how it gets out of the ground. If it gets really good traction, we'll then talk to our partners about how we resource it up on a more permanent basis. But first, we need to demonstrate that it works. All right. One more question. Okay. Marcus.
Patrick, just your strategy in relation to gaming generally, particularly with the move to acquire and take over the operational responsibility for Bahama. How does STAR fit into that?
Thank you. From our perspective, gaming has always been a financial investment. We haven't been operating casinos until Bahamar, and Bahamar is a recent development. But we are not unfamiliar with, we are familiar with the gaming industry because We've always had an interest in SJM, in the holding company of SJM in Macau. But there's always been a financial investment we don't operate. In this JV, clearly the star would be the operator. Our expertise is more on the retail hospitality and development side. Bahar Mar, you rightly pointed out, is the first time that we will be operating the casinos there. We are hiring staff from casinos in the U.S. That is operated by our team in the U.S. So at this point, I would not emphasize that as our main focus. I would say, again, gaming has always been something that we've been more on the passive side. But here, you know, we have the experts, so I'm not worried about our Australia presence.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Let's move on. First of all, thank you so much for coming, Patrick. You can judge by the questions that you've got a much more interesting life and proposition than we do. So thank you for coming, and enjoy the rest of your time here in Australia.
Thank you.
Next step is Jeff. So there's coffees being lined up there. I suggest everybody grabs a drink. We'll go outside, and Jeff Hogg's going to take us for a quick little tour, and then we come back here and talk about Queen's Wharf more formally. Jeff?
Yeah, so we have just a very short 10-minute opportunity where they've actually stopped on the site so that we can walk pretty much straight into the site to have a look around. So we will need to pretty quickly head out there, but if you do grab an umbrella, there's a small chance of rain. But we'll go into the site, we'll get about 10 minutes there, you can see the size of it, and then we'll walk around the block before coming back. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, well, we'll get underway. So hopefully you can sense the size and scale of the precinct by just popping into there. So I'm shortly going to talk about some extra retail space that we've been able to get worked through with the state government. But just to give you a bearing, when I talk about an extra retail footprint, that is from George Street, which was the street which I showed we're out there, right up to the river's edge, from Margaret Street to the actual heritage buildings. So when we talk about the footprint of the integrated resort and the expansion, you can start to realise how large that footprint and that space is. Look, in my presentation, I'm going to really focus on three key themes. The first is about the substantial growth opportunity that exists. Talk about the earnings opportunity that's been enhanced since bid and the scale that we've been able to deliver working with the state government. And then also give you a quick update on the actual development plan and timeframe itself and the fact that it's on schedule. But first, I really want to focus a lot on the investment highlights and scale. On slide 36, there's really three key market drivers and three property-specific drivers I just want to walk through, and I will go through each of these in more detail later in the presentation. But number one, Brisbane is under-penetrated from a gaming market. The ability for us to operate a large-scale integrated resort compared to what we operate today is the primary driver to close that gap. But at the moment, our slot and table spend is only about 50% of our peers compared to similar cities and operations from a spend per capita. The favourable demographic turns are strong for Brisbane. We have a large catchment, which will be around 2.3 million people, growing at about 2% per annum. It's also a very attractive market in where that growth segments are coming. A large growth continues to be from the Asian segment and that population growth. And we also have high incomes compared to areas like Melbourne. It's very similar from an average income perspective. There is substantial tourism opportunity, which Matt touched on in Brisbane, but also I'm going to reflect on the Southeast Queensland component of that. We are the largest domestic overnight visitor market already. It's primarily a leisure market. The international overnight visitor market is growing significantly and expected to continue for at least another 10 years. And I will touch on about the Brisbane Airport, which from a scale and size perspective, their development is unbelievable in what they're doing, and it will come on board in 2020. From a property perspective, you can see the scale of the CBD location. 13 hectares right in the heart of the CBD, a large footprint that we're able to create with a new integrated resort that has significant connection from both a pedestrian but also traffic movement as well as public infrastructure. Matt touched on it earlier, and I'll go through in more detail, but this is an unbelievably good license that we have, with good license conditions, the ability to expand to 2,500 gaming machines, unlimited table games and unlimited multi-terminal gaming machines, and also the fact that the restrictions in the regulatory environment is literally the best that we have in Australia. And certainly the last one, it's about being able to have that scale benchmark to our peers, to be able to attract a size of integrated resort that will drive the local market that's within 50, 100k drive radius of the property, to be able to deliver growth in domestic and international visitation. All of those factors for this precinct are available, and we're very excited about the opportunity that will be created with Brisbane's premier entertainment precinct. But before I go through in detail each of these, I just want to reflect a little bit again on some of these scale factors. So it is 13 hectares in the heart of the Brisbane city, literally right in the middle of all the attractions from Queen Street Mall to South Bank to the cultural precinct, and it is the size and scale needed to be able to deliver a destination in itself. The 2,500 slot machines are 1.5 times what we have today in Brisbane. 250 tables is 2.5 times what we operate today, and we have the capacity to expand to 400 plus in the future. 350 multi-terminal gaming machines is 3 times the current capacity of the Brisbane property, but we have the footprint we've created to allow that to expand to over 800. 1,100 hotel rooms is 10 times the number of hotel rooms that we offer today. And I will highlight, on top of those extra 1,000 rooms that Queen's Wharf development will bring to the precinct, there is obviously significant other hotel infrastructure and investment happening right around us. So a significant increase in hotel rooms adjacent or within the precinct. 50 food and beverage outlets, as Matt touched on, the culinary experiences and the drive for locals, the increase in residential people living in CBDs, all of those trends are similar here in Brisbane. And the Queen's Wharf development will be able to leverage that growth and demand for local food and beverage opportunities within the CBD, but also position Brisbane and Queensland as a culinary destination itself and drive incremental domestic and international visitation. Significant retail footprint has been able to be expanded since bid, and I'll talk on that very shortly. And again, we have an additional 2,000 plus car parks right in the heart of the integrated resort, in addition to the Treasury car park and the Charlotte Street car park that the consortium purchased recently. So again, why do I highlight that? Because it's the understanding that today we have a very small, localised casino that really can only attract people within a 15-20k radius. What we're talking about is large, large-scale integrated resort in a wonderful, wonderful location, and that scale is important to be able to really leverage the benefits. So I'm now just going to take time and go through each of these, and these key market drivers are exceptionally important. So as I touched on, I'm on slide 39. So at the moment, the Brisbane casino gaming revenue per capita is only around 50% of our peers. And when I say the peers, I'm really comparing to peers who have large-scale integrated resorts in operation today. So we're comparing the small property up against what will be a large integrated resort. The actual gaming market itself has been growing. So you'll see there the pub club market over the last 15 years, 5.5% growth. So that is a really positive trend in the local gaming machine market. Some of that growth within 20K, a lot of it just on the outer rims of that 20K. But it really highlights that that market is continuing to grow and expand. And while our casino growth share of that has been lower, the opportunity with an integrated resort of size and scale to be able to leverage that market is fantastic. If I look at the next slide and talking about the growing local catchment. So Brisbane's population growth will be at 2.6 million by the time Queen's Wharf opens. 3.3 million in southeast Queensland. Literally everything within southeast Queensland is a 2-hour radius of this property, a 2-hour drive radius of this property, and therefore accessible. Almost 5 million people will live in southeast Queensland by 2036. So the population is growing and the opportunity is strong. As I touched on earlier, Asian-born is now at 7.4% in 2016, which is up 5.8% from 2011. Our Asian-born share in Brisbane in 2016 is similar to where Melbourne was at 8.4% in 2006. So I just wanted to think about, as that continues to grow, those trends are starting to indicate population growth coming to Brisbane, but also the growth in those key segments like Asian-born are growing. Brisbane's sort of where Melbourne most probably was back in 2006, and you've all seen the growth and significant changes that have happened there over the last 10 years. Brisbane is about to go through its growth in a similar way. This is something people may not be as aware of, but the actual relative household weekly income is on a par with Melbourne. So here in Brisbane, the average income is very similar. So population's growing and growing quickly, and household incomes are very strong. Add that to the fact that the median house prices, however, are 30 to 40% below Sydney and Melbourne. So people have the income, and it costs them less to be able to buy their properties, and therefore there is an opportunity there which is even stronger than what exists in Melbourne and Sydney for their discretionary spend and where they'd like to spend it. Of course, no surprise when you join those two together, and I've now moved on to slide 42, that there is significant interstate migration and jobs growth here in the heart of Brisbane. That's off the back primarily of a decade on growth, but certainly the recent trends up until September 2017 have almost doubled the 10-year average of other areas. So this reflects improving employment opportunities and lower house costs compared to Sydney and Melbourne. That is expected to go on for a long, long time. The other thing that's of significance is actual job growth is growing at twice that rate of the population growth. So we're creating 4% growth in jobs here in Brisbane, while the population is growing at 2%. So not only is the interstate migration coming, the job growth is going faster than the immigration, which again leads to being very confident about the long-term trends and the available spend of people who are living in Brisbane, but also the number of people that will choose Brisbane to be their home.